You are listening to WXRWLP Milwaukee, 104.1 FM, and RiverWestRadio.com globally. And welcome to The Anti. I am your host, NTSC, and this is a weekly primer on freedom. The Anti is anti-authoritarian, anti-capitalist, anti-hierarchy, anti-sexist, anti-racist, anti-fascist, and a lot more. If we are against so much, what in the world do we stand for? The ideals of freedom. In this series, we explore what a free society would look like while recognizing that none of us today are truly free. Having said all of that, even though the device you're listening on right now likely was not free, the radio waves to which you are listening are. However, WXRW costs money to operate. So to help us out, you can always visit the station at 824 East Center Street, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and buy a hat or a mug or a t-shirt. All of those proceeds will go directly to supporting the station. Or if you like any of the programming that you hear on WXRW, please reach out and become an official underwriter. Every little bit helps. And now you can also dial into River West Radio on your smart speaker of choice. Just tell your listening device to play WXRW River West Radio. We're on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. This week's episode is about democracy, in a sense. I have dear friends and family who believe very strongly in the sanctity of representative democracy. This show isn't about that. I'll need to devote at least a whole half hour, if not more, to representative democracy and its myriad failings. This is not that day. So recently, the NFL, National Football League, instituted new rules regarding how players may or may not exercise their rights to free speech and protest. Of course, all of this was kicked off by Colin Kaepernick's controversial habit of kneeling during the national anthem. We're going to have to go into nationalism in a later episode too, but suffice it to say, I am anti-nationalism, anti-borders, anti-nations, and extremely anti-statist. Okay, if you've been living under a rock, like I try to sometimes, Colin Kaepernick knelt during the national anthem, using his visibility as a famous athlete to draw attention to the violence of the state and the monopoly on violence as exercised by the police arm of the state. Basically, you know, cops keep murdering black and brown Americans and Americans of color in very high numbers, and of course the officers in question face no repercussions for what amounts to really blatant, obvious homicide. I want to mention here that I am an abolitionist. I believe very firmly in the abolition of prisons and punishment as exercised and mandated by any legislative branch of any government. I don't want the cops, you know, who commit these murders to go to jail. I don't want jails to exist. I don't want cops to exist. The prison industrial complex and state violence and systemic racism are all topics that we're going to have to touch on in later episodes. So why am I bringing up Colin Kaepernick at all if I'm not going to discuss all of these issues that really the Colin Kaepernick debate are centered on? Well, since the NFL is in the news, I wanted to take this topical opportunity to discuss what might be the biggest contradiction to what most Americans consider to be our functional democracy, and that is the workplace. Because really, this new term as dictated by the NFL is really nothing more than the same kind of procedure that any working American could be faced with from their bosses. So in last week's episode, we talked about time and temporality. If you missed it, all archived episodes are available at creamcitymedia.com/anti. We touched briefly on the tyranny of the clock, and in so doing, we brought up the concept of time theft, as defined by corporations like Walmart and Amazon. Time theft is essentially when an employee takes a break or uses the restroom. And we talked about this last week. It's gotten to the point where Amazon employees working in fulfillment centers and in warehouses will actually relieve themselves into bottles or just avoid drinking entirely before and during their shift so that they don't incur fines or reprimands from their bosses and managers or risk just getting fired outright for committing the, you know, quote unquote crime of time theft by using the bathroom. That is what today's show is about. Not time theft, but the terms of employment within this so-called democracy we all labor under. To survive in this system, you have to work a job. Unless you are independently wealthy, which, you know, at least 99% of people are not. Basically, that means everyone needs to work a job. If we're just rounding up, everyone has to work a job. You are forced by threat of death to sell your wages and your body for income, which you then use to purchase goods and services such as food and clothing and housing and healthcare and et cetera, et cetera. This is pretty basic stuff, right? Everybody knows this. We're taught this unconsciously since we are small enough to begin learning about the world in which we live. Let's focus on the jobs we all work, their structure, and how it is by definition counter to the tenets of democracy. Your job does not function as a democracy. Okay, that's a generalization, and I don't like generalizations, so let's look at some stats. According to labor statistics, out of over 30 million businesses, corporations and companies in the U.S., that's a lot of businesses, only 0.001% operate as a democratic cooperative. That is a dot followed by two zeros and a one. 0.001% are actually operated under the terms of a democracy, where workers have any say whatsoever in how the business for which they work operates. So some listeners might be asking about labor unions at this point, or wanting to bring up the point of labor unions. We're going to talk more about those organizations later in this episode. But right now, since we're just looking at the math, less than 7% of all American workers belong to a union of any kind. So the simple figures, 0.001% of businesses are operated as democratic cooperatives, and less than 7% of workers belong to a union. Mathematically, if we're just going by the percentages, the odds are very good that you, listener, that your place of work is not run democratically at all. The odds are actually very, very good that your place of work operates as a totalitarian oligarchy. If you recall from our episode on fascism, totalitarianism requires all members of a society to be the same, to have the same goals, aspirations, mentality, personal allegiances, etc. Does your work require you to wear a uniform or adhere to a code of dress? Does it require you to follow scripts of some kind? Does it seek to indoctrinate you to what it would call its corporate culture, its corporate ethics and values? Can you be punished or fired for not doing those things, for not dressing appropriately, for not adhering to the corporate culture, ethics, and values? That's totalitarianism as expressed in your workplace. What is oligarchy? I really like diving into the history of words and stuff. So anytime you run into a word that has the suffix archy or crassy in the form of, you know, democracy, it always derives from the same root, the Latin term to rule. Might be Latin or Greek. Sorry, because I could have taken the time to look that up. Not gonna. Monarchy, for example, means one person rules. Plutarchy means the very rich rule. So all an oligarchy really means is that the very few rule. That's the term ole. Just basically means very few. And archy is obviously to rule. So an oligarchy is typified or characterized by a top-down hierarchical structure with the very, very few on the top dictating the rules and the terms for the levels beneath them. This structure can be seen in almost all American companies and corporations. Really, again, looking at the math, this structure can be seen in all American companies and corporations. So the very top of this pyramid, if you visualize it as that, is typified by the upper echelon of C-level officers. So you got your CEOs, your COOs, your CFOs, blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera. You know, your chiefs, right? There is usually a president or a chairman of the board, and then you've got a board of directors, and of course, there are the shareholders and the investors, all of whom, even though they don't work for the company, they have more input and power than the majority of the people who actually do work for the company. We'll talk about shareholders and other parasitic entities in a later episode. So let's go back to our pyramid. Beneath all of the C-level officers, you have your managers and you have your directors. They generally have training in just management and some sort of, you know, business degree in justifying their own existence by making people's lives miserable. You know, they're middle managers and they're team leaders and basically people who have no idea what the actual ins and outs of a job are, but they sure do want to tell you how to do yours. Then there's the rank and file peons of the company, the people actually doing the thing that earns profit for the C-level execs and the shareholders. And that's you, the rank and file peons. You and me sell our labor and wages either at an hourly rate or through a salary, and you earn all of the money for the company through that labor, through that production. Production doesn't necessarily mean that you're creating anything, mind you. Production is just the production of income, of profit. That can be through selling or building or coding or calling or mailing or serving or whatever the heck you actually do from one day to the next during your shift. You are the means of production, and fundamentally, you are not in control when you are at your job. Your boss gets to dictate the terms of your life when you are on the clock. That is the totalitarian oligarchy of the American working landscape. To put it another way, your job is a dictatorship.
I think it's kind of funny. People put nap pods in their office, you know, in their offices. It'd be nice if people got enough sleep so they wouldn't need to nap during the workday. The workplace is truly a public health and environmental hazard, and it is a source of a lot of the health spending on health care and a source of a lot of the toxicity and health problems that working people face. According to the World Economic Forum, about 3/4 of all worldwide spending on health care is spending for chronic disease. Most chronic disease comes, at least in part, from stress, and most stress comes from the workplace. So work hours have gone up, particularly in the United States. People are expected to be always available through their cell phones or available on email. One survey said that 81% of people were checking work-related email even when they were at home, sometimes even in the middle of the night, so nobody is ever off. That is a big source of stress. In the olden days, 40, 50 years ago, people had careers, then they had jobs, now they have gigs. Many people are freelancers, and if you're a freelancer, you don't know from one week to the next where your next gig is coming from, and so that makes it very stressful to plan for your family obligations, and it makes it very stressful because of the uncertainty of your economic income. In the United States, even though we're supposedly a family-friendly country, we're not actually very family-friendly, and we don't really have policies that make it easy for people to have both a family life and a work life. We don't oftentimes have childcare accommodations or flexible work schedules. And so all these things have gradually, over time, made work environments somewhat, I think, more toxic. Not surprisingly, surveys show that stressed employees are more likely to quit, to turn over, and turnover is, of course, expensive. People do not do their best work when they're exhausted or when they're sick. So, and in fact, there's a bunch of studies that show that the longer work hours actually reduce productivity beyond a certain point. We've created lose-lose situations in which companies are not benefiting, even as people are getting made ill by this. So it's really kind of sad. But it's interesting to me, many governments believe that stress is a natural part of work, that you can't do anything about it. And that is completely untrue. There are better and worse organizations. We can do something about work hours. We can do something about work-family conflict. We can certainly do something, about job control and these other and economic insecurity to make work both more fulfilling and more engaging and less stressful.
If you're just joining us, you are listening to WXRW River West Radio. This is The Anti, a weekly primer on freedom, and I am your host, NTSC. This week, we're talking about the great contradiction in the American democracy, your workplace. We're going to have to go over the fallacy and the failing of representative democracy in a later episode, but right now, we're talking about how the oligarchical dictatorship of the majority of American corporations and companies is the real and the truest face. It's the truest nature of our so-called democracy. What you just heard was the voice of Jeffrey Pfeffer, author of the book Dying for a Paycheck. Work is stress, and stress is killing you. Stress is killing all of us. We talked about it in the episode on structural violence. The oligarchical dictatorship of the American workplace and really the capitalist workplace in general as it manifests globally is a prime form of structural violence. And yet, we live in a democracy, don't we? You know, we hear all the time about how the men and the women of our armed forces are bringing democracy to the world and how they fight for our democracy and how America in particular is this great experiment in pure democracy and as envisioned by the ancient Greeks and yada, yada, yada. And it's all obviously baloney. You cannot say that your country is a democracy when everyone works in a collection of dictatorships. When every workday you spend is laboring under the rules and the operating procedures of a taskmaster, who is, by the way, in no way accountable for or interested in anything beyond your productivity. When you are at your place of work, you have no freedoms that are not specifically dictated by your employer. And as of right now, there are at least some protections and oversight as mandated by the government through OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration. But every year, Congress revokes more and more health and safety standards as suggested by OSHA. And OSHA, by the way, has only been around fewer than 50 years. And in comparison to the occupational safety standards of other countries, American workers suffer much more workplace illness, stress, and also disfiguring and or fatal accidents. According to the Department of Labor Statistics, and this is, mind you, when we account for underreporting, which is rampant, almost 12 million Americans are injured on the job every single year. And protections and practices that might have been able to avoid those injuries are weakened every year by Congress. all in the name of the free market, you know, all in the name of the invisible hand. Because I guess the idea is if you remove more government oversight, then it will be up to the corporations themselves to try and protect the safety of workers. And it's, you know, in the best interest of the business to not, you know, fatally maim its workers. But that's been proven to not be true. I mean, before labor laws were even a thing, before there was such a thing at all of, you know, environmental protections for the workplace, standards for safety were abysmal. You know, you look at the early Industrial Revolution, and there are more examples than you could fit in an enormous volume of books about maimings and disfigurement and deaths on the job. That's the whole reason that these protections were put in place to begin with, because people were dying en masse in their place of work. So anyway, it's been, you know, proved pretty empirically that there is no interest on the part of the employer to actually protect their employees. But that's kind of beside the point. The larger point is, of course, that you labor inside a small dictatorship, which is supposed to be operating in the larger context of a national representative democracy. And that, by its very nature, is a glaring contradiction and a fundamental fallacy of what we consider to be our functional democracy. So let's return to our original example from the start of the episode: Colin Kaepernick's protest and the NFL's decision to limit the impact of professional NFL players' voices. My social media feed is full right now of angry people condemning the NFL for their actions against what we see as free speech and what we can be forgiven as thinking is a free speech issue. But the truth of the matter is, free speech does not extend to you within your place of work. All players within the context of the NFL are employees, and the terms of their speech are literally and directly dictated by the decisions of their employer, in this circumstance, the NFL. So no, the players do not have any rights here. Their free speech is not being infringed upon because within the context of your workplace, within the context of their workplace, they have no free speech. You have no freedoms whatsoever in that context. They can no more legitimately protest, you know, this action on the part of the NFL than you can protest your place of work requiring you to smile at customers or greet them as they enter the store or wear a uniform or clock in at a certain time on a certain day at a certain location. You can, you know, protest and disobey as much as you want, but your employer is well within their rights to fire you for doing so. And that's the threat of structural violence. So what do we do about it? You know, we talked a little bit about unions earlier, and most left-leaning podcasts or broadcasts would say unionize your place of work. And to be fair, millennials are doing just that. More and more unions are slowly popping up across the country. And of course, as is always the case with these things, lawmakers are doing everything they can to bust up those unions, or just trying to legislate, you know, what is essentially a ban on collective bargaining entirely. But anyway, a union is a decent first step towards the kind of progress that the anti stands for. But I've said it in previous episodes, and I'll say it again, it bears repeating: groveling and bargaining for slightly improved working conditions is not analogous to freedom. Freedom is actually liberating yourself and everyone from beneath the control of any and all bosses and managers. Real freedom is seizing the means of production. You'll hear that again and again, and we'll go over what exactly that means in a later episode. But at least in this modern context, that means you. The means of production is you. And it is in all of our best interests to cease laboring under the rules and the ligatures of the bosses and to start laboring for ourselves, for things we actually need under our own collective terms. Maybe begin by asking yourself what your current job even actually achieves. Like, what does your job do within the context of the business for which you work? Does your job fulfill an actual need, or does it serve only to create profit for faceless shareholders? You know, does your job, does the business for which you work feed or clothe or house or protect anyone? Does it sell poor quality, overpriced things? Does it create value for some predatory business practice or for some parasitic entity? Or does your job improve the world? My guess is no. Probably not. There's not a whole lot of money in improving the world. And actually, in a later episode, we'll most likely go over the fallacy of the market in general and how the true reward for any business practice is actually to the detriment of not just, you know, the people working, but also the entire environment, the world as a whole, and all of humanity. So yeah, my guess is that your job does not help anyone, and actually, against, you know, all of your best interests and against your wishes, your job most likely does a fair amount of harm. Most jobs do. So why on earth would we keep doing it? Well, because we have to, right? Because of the very real threat of structural violence on a daily basis. Well, I would posit, instead of unionizing, let's cooperate. We're going to talk more about this in later episodes as we begin kind of envisioning what we can all do to work together to solve these problems. But non-participation in the systems of structural violence is, at least in my opinion, the only real way to enact the change that will eventually liberate us from this toxic, deadly machine for which we all labor. For now, spread the message that your workplace is not a democracy. Make that very clear to your coworkers. There are some businesses that have mandates in place that don't allow you to discuss things like your salary or your hourly wage or the hours you work or the amount of, you know, leave that you get or the amount of vacation and stuff like that. Talk about it anyway. Talk about how your workplace is not a democracy, how it's unequal, and how it does not serve you or your coworkers. And then do what you can to enact, at least in small ways, systems of direct democracy within your workplace. It's not going to be easy. Do what you can. And if what you do, if working with your coworkers doesn't stick, well, we'll address that in later episodes. Thank you so much for tuning into The Anti here on WXRW River West Radio. I'm your host, NTSC, and I'll be back again next week to discuss further topics as they relate to freedom and our awesome shared potential. Past episodes can be found at creamcitymedia.com/anti. And for more information, go to riverwestradio.com.